Hey, if you're listening to this podcast, there's one thing you can do if you like it, and that is go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. And why would you want to do that? Well, hey, we'll read it. I'll actually do it in character, even if I don't do the character. You name it, I'll read it. It's that simple. Also, supporting this podcast through Patreon. It's not your duty. You don't have to do it. I'm not begging here, but if you'd like to, it helps. Well, it helps me, Tim Andrews, make a little bit of money. Just go to patreon.com/TimAndrews. And donate. That's all you got to do. There's some great rewards. We're going to have more great rewards. They're going to be great. They're going to be huge rewards. You're going to love them. I swear.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
I like two cleats. My mouth feels dry.
Oh, he's a feisty one. Like that.
Well, with all due respect, Mr. Negan, in my line of work, when you're on your knees, they don't give you bubble gum. They give you penis.
Shut up! Well, well, well. A named Negan. I think you look more like a Stephanie. Your face looks like Fonzie made the Negro League.
Stop it, Suki. You're killing them.
Them some ugly-ass boots you got on there. As the white boys say on the internet, what are those?
Something funny to you, Drippy?
Dry and brittle Jerry Curl. Disgrace. Look at this pasty bastard.
Oh, God, no.
Good God, have some goddamn respect for yourself. Man the f*** up!
What do you want, money? Sex? Sex, isn't it?
I'll try some sex.
I have a wife.
What?
I have a wife.
Okay.
Come on, man. All lives matter. All of us, right?
Not if black lives don't.
Kill us for what?
Seems like a lot of you still got some fight in you. It's good. I like that. Makes it more fun. You can breathe. You can blink.
You can cry.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of you gonna be doing some of that.
Nice.
It's time for Radio Labyrinth with Tim Andrews, Ira Malkin, Steph Swain, and Jeff Leboff.
Welcome to episode 49 of Radio Labyrinth. My name is Tim. There's Jeff.
Howdy.
Uh-huh. There's Ira.
Hi.
Throwing everybody off.
No shit.
Say hi, Ira.
I did. I said
okay.
Hi.
Okay. Stephanie.
Hi, Ira. Howdy.
And that other voice you hear is Jeff Melkonian. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, welcome, hi. Jeff.
Hey,
welcome.
Hey, we're probably from the same...
neighborhood?
No. Well, I don't know. Ancestry. Because I'm a Malkin. And you're a Malkonian?
Melkonian. With an E, yeah.
Oh, you're an E. Okay.
Yeah, Melkonian.
I forget.
Did
about
I say it wrong?
I take
Jeff?
It back.
Did I say Malkonian?
Yeah, I don't remember how you said it. Now we've got it.
And the reason we have Jeff in the studio with us today, it was very nice of him to come here on a weeknight and record with us, is he's a famous guy and very popular in Atlanta with Breadwinner Breads, Farm to Ladle, also known for being in the band The Remakes, and way before that, the Josh Joplin Group. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yay.
It's very nice to be here.
Jeff turned me on to The Remakes a while ago, and we've gone to see you at, what's the name of that Irish place in Sandy Springs?
Meehan's,
yeah. Yep. We've gone there a couple times. Most recently saw you at Venkman's, which was a fantastic show.
Thank you. That was a fun night.
Venkman's is great.
What a great venue. My first time there.
Yeah, it was my first time there, too. I liked that venue a lot.
Yeah.
How about those stage rules, though, huh?
Stage rules?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
What?
When you play there, they send you like a packet of stuff, mostly stuff you're not allowed to do.
No REM songs.
When you're a band.
That sucks.
But I respect it.
It's a short show.
Right. I respect it, though, because it makes it very classy over there.
Yeah.
You know, I've known those guys, Peter and Nick, for many, many years. We go way back, at least probably 12 years, and they were... they were in the great band called YOU,
mm-hmm.
Before Yacht Rock happened, and I produced their last album, which is an awesome record. It's a beautiful, beautiful record, and not because of what I did, but they really wrote a beautiful record, and we.
But Yacht Rock did, or YOU?
YOU did.
Oh, I see.
And
because Yacht Rock, that would just be all covers.
Right, right, right. And as we were kind of finishing up that record, is when Yacht Rock really started to kind of take shape a little bit, and doing a show here and there at the Dark Way, at Ten High, and at that point, I was like, yeah, forget this original band thing.
Right. Let's make some money.
Let's bottle this, and quickly. I actually in turn started managing and booking them, and God, they got very big very quickly, to the point that I didn't have time to work as a manager.
Yeah, so
for them,
turned them on to somebody else.
No, they're so smart and so hardworking, and they really just figured out how to do it themselves, and that's what they do now. They have their own management team in house, and they do all their booking, all their managing. And yet still put out a great product show after show. So a couple of years ago, they had the bright idea to open a restaurant, which I never recommend. And certainly don't listen to my own advice.
A lot of work, right?
And they nailed it. They knew exactly what they wanted to do with Venkman's, and it's a beautiful place. Great food.
Yeah,
definitely.
And they just like they've always kind of run their careers, which has been very organized and very well thought out and meticulous in their planning. They, and to your comment about rules of the stage, I mean, they just kind of have things in place, but it's also very performer friendly.
Yeah.
So a beautiful backstage with a bathroom
and
feed you well and drink you well and all these.
Well, and even having a sound guy nowadays at a restaurant kind of.
Yeah, right, and Hans is their sound guy there who used to be the sound guy at Ten High. I mean, he's incredible. But I left there thinking, I've probably played 1,000 shows in different clubs and theaters, and it was the best I was ever treated. It was the nicest backstage and the best food. And
I went into that backstage area. I was like, really?
And oh, by the way, it was sold out, and we made some money from it. So it was like, what better? We couldn't have had it any better. So. Kudos to those guys.
Jeff, are you an Atlanta native? Were you born and raised?
No, I wasn't born here. I moved here at the beginning of high school. So I was 14, almost 15.
All right. From where?
Southern California.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So kind of a...
And my whole family's from New York, so we kind of made our way. My dad was military, and we made our way around. But I spent most of my early years from probably 3 or 4 years old until we moved here, just outside Los Angeles.
Okay. And did you, like, the people that, when being a teenager, you forged a lot of friendships. Were you in bands? Do you still hang out with those people? Did you?
I heard you were in the marching band.
I was in the marching band. I played the drums in the marching band.
And I mean, who wasn't?
I played the flute.
You know what?
I could see that.
It was terrible.
I still, like, when I see a marching band come on at, halftime at a college game, I still watch them. I think, what a fascinating art. I mean, it's kind of cool to, synchronize what they do. And I did it too. I did it for 5 years. It was a lot of fun. I made a lot of friends in marching band.
In our marching band in high school, Jeff pretended for 4 years to play the tuba.
It was a baritone, and I couldn't.
He couldn't play it.
I could play it, but I could play it like in concerts or practice, but marching, I could not play it.
So he pretended.
So I had to either march and pretend to play or not marching.
Did you just make a tuba noise while you were walking?
No, I didn't. I just pretended to blow into it. I didn't even blow into it.
So ironically, we were just talking to, my wife and I were just talking to my son's music teacher at school, mm-hmm. and he was playing the trumpet, and he's says it's too hard, and she said, so he said, is he playing? And she said, well, I thought he was, and then there was this one day where the other three trumpet players forgot their trumpet, and that was kind of a dead giveaway he wasn't. And then there was another day where I walked over there and he didn't even have music on his stand. So
jazz.
And he wasn't even marching like you, Jeff. So, I mean, What was his excuse?
I played drums, and I liked playing stand-up. I liked playing the snare drum. I didn't like playing cymbals because they would just sort of mash into your hand. They were so heavy. So finally I made it to drums, and then I quit, whatever.
You didn't do timpani?
No, I didn't. I did the timpani in orchestra or whatever we called it, band.
I am still close with guys I play. You know, actually my best friend from high school, Jeff Rosenberg, is the bass player in the Remakes. And so we've been playing together for 32 years. And
we
played together in high school. We stuck together. You know, we went to different colleges, but we've always kind of, you know, played together. And then about 7 years ago, and we started to, we kind of got dared to do a remake, and the Remakes is an REM tribute. It's the early catalog. And the owner of Meehan's, one drunk night sitting at his bar with him, said, "You need to play that REM stuff here." And I said, "All right." And he literally booked it. We were the first band to play it, Meehan.
Oh, cool.
So,
he paid you in haggis.
Paid us in haggis, yes.
How many years have the Remakes been around now?
So this would be, technically our first show was summer of 2009. So what is that, 7 years we've been playing?
Wow.
But the three of us have been playing together since the end of college, so 92. I mean, just screwing around playing, but playing and having fun. And
yeah, those guys in your other band also, my favorite bald one?
Well, the only crossover, the drummer Webb is the same drummer.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a different lineup other than the two of us.
All right,
so that's a five piece.
And what kind of stuff does
what is my favorite
Baldwin? My favorite Baldwin play.
We are,
now, who is your favorite Baldwin?
Yeah, right.
Favorite
Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin.
These days it changes all the time. God, it's like I'm kind of tired of Alec Baldwin. And
what about Adam Baldwin? He doesn't get much play.
He's not an official Baldwin brother.
Who's she?
Yeah.
Who's she? It's a, I call it our drunk party dance band, and it is what it is. We get out there and play the most random, you know, every song, you know, every word to every song. So it can go from Baby Got Back into Driving and Crying's Honeysuckle Blue to Black Crow's Remedy, and then into like an Elvis Costello. It's all over the place. So it's kind of like if you had a diverse music collection and you put your iPod on shuffle, that's
right.
What we're doing.
Cool.
And we just don't give a crap about, you know, what anybody wants to hear, and we play whatever we feel like, and it tends to work.
When are we going to go see them, Jeff?
I'd like to go see them.
You've never been? I thought you'd been.
I haven't been to a Baldwin show.
Right. No.
How often is that typically?
I don't know. Every 3 or 4 months We sit around like, oh, I guess we need to book a show, and we book a show. And
it's not easy to find well-paying venues. Yeah.
It's not, and it's not, honestly, at this point, I'm certainly not doing it for the money, but it's...
I say that, but then every time I pack up my stuff and I, you know, schlep out to a place, I'm like, it's got to be something.
Well, this is the thing. The last show we saw at Venkman's, you can tell, and even before that you're having fun.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's what sometimes bands playing... don't have fun, and you can tell, but you guys are all smiling, you sound good, you get everything tight, but it's fun.
We do, and we're all very, very close friends. I mean, those are my closest buddies, and we just have fun together. And you know, I played full time up until about 12 years ago, and it was important for me to continue to keep doing that in some capacity. And I actually got away from it for a while and didn't realize how much I missed it until I got back into this. The Remakes really is what kind of started me. It was probably 4 or 5 years in there where I just wasn't playing out. I wasn't performing in front of people.
Well, you had kids.
I had kids. I was, trying to make a living.
Well, you had the Jeff, I believe. Now, you knew Jeff. Jeff knew Jeff from the Josh Joplin group.
Right,
Jeff
right.
is a very, very huge fan.
Jeff was a Jeff groupie.
Yes.
Jeff was a Geoff groupie.
Geoff groupie.
Well, I can't say that.
I got into the Josh Joplin band pretty hardcore.
When
they were here. Yeah. I liked them a lot.
Those were some fun days.
Yeah, and then they became the Josh Joplin group.
Yes.
Oh, it was the band first.
Band first and then group.
Yeah.
Josh and I still go back and forth about names.
How about we just do Josh?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to play a little without violating copyright law here. I'm going to play a little. This is a song called Camera One. It was a single. And when did this come out?
So this came out in early 2001.
Yep. Okay.
And it was on an album called Useful Music that we originally recorded with Sean Mullins on his record label,
okay.
SMG Records. This song was not on that record. It hadn't been written yet.
Oh, okay.
When we put out the original record of Useful Music, which came out in, I think, 99 or early 2000. And then we got signed to Artemis, and they wanted to re-release Useful Music.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, at that same time is when Camera One was written.
Okay.
And it kind of became... Josh was writing these incredible songs. It's, you know, each with each album, he was just becoming a better and better songwriter, and then put out Useful Music, and then Camera One happened, and
right.
It was like, it's kind of a no-brainer. We need to put this on the record, and we did, and it was a really cool experience. We went back in and remixed a bunch of the stuff from the original recording, and then we got the opportunity to work with Jerry Harrison from Talking Heads.
Right.
And at the time, I mean, he had a streak at that point of like that live album, that band Live. And I mean, they sold 8 kajillion records, and then he produced No Doubt. And
they're from Pennsylvania too, Live.
Are they?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Josh was originally from Pennsylvania.
Right.
Yeah.
That same area.
Right. And so here we are, you know, getting to work with Jerry Harrison at his height of being a producer, and at the same time we're all like Gaga or Talking Heads fans our whole lives,
right?
Like, this is really cool.
Were you guys all here in Atlanta? Is that how you met?
We were, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But we recorded that out in San Francisco with him, and we re-recorded a song called Matter, which was the first song on Useful Music.
But would you say the core of Josh Joplin Group was like Atlanta based maybe centered sort of?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Josh eventually moved to New York in 99, but we formed the band at the end of 94, and we were all local musicians.
Did you get a lot of airplay on 99X? Because I noticed whenever we'd go see you guys or see Josh Joplin by himself, Leslie Fram was always there.
Leslie was a huge champion of the band, and all those guys at 99X, Steve Craig and Jimmy Barron and Steve Barnes, and all those guys, they really they were so good at giving attention to the local guys. And I think when Sean, when Rockabye or Lullaby broke, it really opened the doors for a lot of good local stuff to get heard. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, this guy can do it. Sean was playing one acoustic guitar at Eddie's Attic and selling CDs out of his van for many, many years. And all of a sudden Leslie's spinning it. And it's like,
she was without a doubt the most influential alternative, whatever you want to call it. But I'm just going to say rock program director of the 90s, without a doubt.
I agree with you.
I mean,
Yeah, she's gone over the countryside. She works CMT, and she's still incredibly influential. But she certainly helped tremendously with putting us on the map, and a lot of local, John Mayer and Sean, and I mean, really.
Yeah, and look at Mayer now; he's with the Dead.
I know.
And Camera One got you guys quite a bit of success. When it came out, you guys were on it was on the Scrubs.
That was our biggest payday.
Isn't that great?
And I think you guys did.
Sadly,
you guys did the talk show circuit. I think I remember seeing you guys on Conan.
We did. We were on Conan.
I remember Jake Cook.
Craig
Kilborn, you know him?
Maybe.
Who's that?
Jake Cook.
No, I don't.
No, maybe that's not his name. Is it Jake Cook? He was with John Mayer. He co-wrote a lot of songs.
Oh, Clay Cook.
Clay Cook.
Yeah, and I know Clay really well. We've been friends for many years. And,
yeah.
And he's now. Zach Brown band.
But he was telling me one time at a party, he goes, yeah, this song that I wrote for John is on this TV show all the time, and he just gets these huge residuals.
Yeah.
What a way to It's great. Yeah. I wish I could write something good.
Did you guys see, I think you guys did Letterman, too.
We did Letterman. Yeah, we did Letterman. And
I think Michael Imperioli was maybe the guest when you
Well, look at you, know everything.
He was.
Told you. He's just, a groupie.
Yeah, he's the groupie fan. Yeah,
so you guys play what?
Right. That's it? That's the song?
That's it?
He was
shot
the,
in the foot.
He was the
it
guest.
It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, we had a really great, we had a really nice, great run with that album. And we ended up, we made another record after that. We kind of, unfortunately, we got caught in that awful time of 9/11 where every industry just went to shit.
Right.
Especially the record business. And it wasn't helping that Napster was a big thing at the time. And there was a lot of, you know, these labels just didn't know how to handle the future.
They couldn't handle it. And then rock radio took a weird turn with Limp Bizkit and all those bands like that. I mean, you stopped hearing the melodic stuff on alternative radio and you started hearing a lot of noise.
Well, I think that there was still a place for the music we were doing. And we were really lucky to get to make our next record considering where the industry was going. I mean, our useful music run stopped dead in its tracks with 9/11. Mm-hmm. We were literally, Josh was on a plane, not on a plane at the time, but on a plane 2 days before to Australia, and he's stuck over there during 9/11. We're supposed to go meet him in Europe 3 days later, or a week later, whatever it was. We're not going at that point. Mm-hmm. And that was the end. That was the end of the run, and we were peaking at that point, which was very unfortunate. And then, of course, it became Thanksgiving and the holidays, and then everybody shuts down. We were lucky enough to get to make the next record. We didn't think we had a 3 or 4 record contract. We got to make that next record that we didn't think we were going to get to make. And it was a high budget record, and it was chock full of hits. And the labels just didn't know what to do. They didn't know. There was so much turmoil and so much personnel changing hands. And
you think nowadays, though, artists pretty much have all the control to a degree.
Yeah.
Not the commercial successful country. I'm just thinking like pop country and to a little bit rock. But if you want to put something out, like a band like Wilco or a band with a smaller following or whatever, could put something out and sell it and boom, then you can tour with it.
Well, yeah, and one of the things, too, that's become such a great thing for bands like Wilco and Radiohead and is that now you can do your own distribution, and these guys aren't even on labels anymore. They're putting out their own record. They're paying for their own records. They have their own studios, and then they're just, you know, they're getting the $15 off the, you know, minus their iTunes cut or whatever. I mean, it's just they're really – it's nice to see – bands getting their due on that, but
it's like if they bust their ass, they can do it.
Like anything else, you got to work hard. The way that young, you know, local bands, unknown bands work now is so different than what we were putting up flyers and we were. So you remember all those mailers we used to send out? I mean, we used to send out postcards for every single show, putting stamps on them and having a database, and it was like we didn't have
mailing list.
We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have
none of that.
Nothing. We had an email list, but it was like nowadays, Venkman's the remake show was incredible to see what it was. Really, the first time we had to really kind of think, okay, how are we going to draw people out because we have not played in town, and we've always played in our backyard up in Sandy Springs. It's been great, but we just did like boosted post on Facebook for REM and 10 mile radius of Venkman's, and people came out. We had 300 plus people that night, and I didn't know anybody in the room. I knew like 30 people in the
room. That's what I was going to ask you. It wasn't people from back in
the day. No, no. I literally knew like Jeff and maybe 15, 20 other people, and that was it.
But
it was packed.
Everybody around us was singing along.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone.
I mean, it is the great thing about tribute bands is... That's
it's cool,
huge,
yeah.
Absolutely.
You know? Absolutely.
I mean, I look in the paper and I'm like, oh, it's a Van Halen cover band. I'm going.
Right.
You know? Right. Even if they suck, I'm going to hear those tunes all night long.
There are a couple of other good ones in town, if you like them. There's a Fleetwood Mac one that they play an awful lot.
I've heard there.
And, you know, Yacht Rock, they just do, what, the 70s and 80s, right?
My favorite is Smithsonian.
Smithsonian. I haven't seen them yet, but I know who you're talking about.
They are...
What is that?
All Smiths.
Smith's band.
Oh.
And they are spot on, and they just nail it. The guitar part, everything.
The Johnny Marr sound?
Yeah, they really do.
How's
the
singer?
He's great.
Yeah.
He thinks he's Morrissey. He's awesome.
Oh,
I mean, he's and he channels it, and he does a great job. They're all outstanding. Yeah. I want to play a show with you know, if anybody wants to book us with them.
Oh, please, do it.
I think that would be the ultimate lineup.
That would be a good
show. It would.
And then get that guy from the early 2000s who did the Neil Diamond cover band.
Super Diamond, what was it?
I know, there were two of them.
Yeah,
I knew one of those guys. Nine Inch Neils.
Yeah.
That's Neil
Diamond. Great name.
And the other one, he was in the other one, too.
Yeah, he was in both of them. So how do you go from, well, you say 2002, 2003, it starts winding down. You toured a little bit more. What came after that? I mean, what did you decide to do?
Well, I was, we had all kind of, the guys in the band, we had all kind of gone through a lot of the same life changes at the same time in terms of getting married, having kids, and you know, we were the most boring band ever on the road. I mean, we really were. We would go back to the hotel after the shows and maybe get a 12-pack of beer between us and watch a movie.
I mean, come on. Most bands were like that.
Well, I don't know. Not the bands we saw, but we were just boring. We were all, you know.
I'm picturing Josh trying to throw a television out the window into the pool.
We weren't rowdy like that at all. I mean, honestly, like we very rarely tied one on, and we still had a lot of fun. We just were really boring, but nobody was like hooking up because we were all married, and
right.
So, but we we're all starting to have kids, and we just, you know, we got dropped from the label like we were expecting to. And at that point we were like, you know, we tried our manager, Russell Carter, tried shopping us some more to some other labels. And it just wasn't, nobody was really, we all kind of lost that momentum, which, and at the same time, there wasn't like a infinite sadness along with it either. We were all pretty happy with what we had done and kind of burned out too, and didn't want to leave burnt out, like
right.
Fully burnt out. So, I'd always done tons of studio work along the way, and I just dove headfirst into production and engineering and built a studio and first full length record I produced was the 5/8 record, the Black Album, that had, the song I'm Still Around on it and Liquor Song. And that's the album that the guys got picked up to go out and tour with R.E.M. on. And
nice.
I mean, they got a lot of really great, you know, accolades from that. Played with them for about a year and produced, Modern Skirts album. They're out of Athens. Second Shift album, Megan Coffey, and then the YOU record. And so, you know, lots of really fun projects that in my little basement studio that was just a fun place to write songs and record. Did a lot of writing but I also kind of went into it with, you know, look, I want to do this, but I don't want to become that local recording engineer guy that's, you know, doing this his whole life. Some album needs to break to get to the next level.
Right.
And we came close on a couple. Modern Skirts came really close to getting a record deal, and so did Second Shift. And but just kind of wound that down and shifted gears completely
to food.
Yeah, to food.
Yeah,
we were.
What a good town to shift into.
It was. End of 2005. We were my sister and my wife and I were. My sister had the bright idea of baking pumpkin breads and selling them over at Super Jenny, which is where she worked. And we started one night. We just over Thanksgiving, we had all these leftover ingredients. We started baking, and we baked like 12 loaves of bread, and they were really good. And we wrapped them up and stuck a bow on them and stuck them in Super Jenny, and they all sold out. And we kept selling them, and all of a sudden we were like, hey, we can do this, and we're really enjoying it. And it was something totally different. And it was nice to work with my family. It was nice to kind of get away from loudspeakers and musicians and
sound men,
everything. But
you're still creating. It's just a different way.
Yeah.
It's still artistic. It's still creating.
And I've always been
quiet.
And I've always been the business guy. I've always walked that line between being the business guy and the creative. And this allowed me to kind of do more of that. And so we did baking for a long. We just had the bread company for a good 4 years before we opened our first restaurant.
And that is in Sandy
Breadwinner
Springs?
Cafe, yeah. Breadwinner Cafe in Sandy Springs. And I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I'd worked in restaurants for many years on and off.
That helps.
Well, what else do you do when you're a struggling musician? I mean, you work in restaurants or you dig ditches.
You guys are opening up just as we moved out of Sandy Springs. I got to eat there a couple times when we lived over there, but then Tim and I used to share an apartment in Sandy Springs, and I'd go over to Breadwinner every now and then and grab lunch or something. Cool. but
it's the little engine that could. I mean, we were very lucky because we had a lot of friends and family in the area that really helped promote it, and to this day we still have never paid for any advertising, and it's been word of mouth, and it still has that mom and pop feel to it.
Right.
And, we're very lucky to have that.
Do you do gluten free?
You have to, or you can't do
business. I know. You couldn't be in business, right?
We do a lot of gluten free. We have a lot of gluten free menu items. Yeah, a lot of salads, a lot of soups.
You want to check them out, go to breadwinnerbreads.com. That's breadwinnerbreads.com.
Well, the restaurant is actually breadwinnercafe.com.
Okay.
But both of those, yes, are valid websites.
Specifically talking about the breads.
Yeah, those are the breads. Yep.
And if you want to see what they have on their menu, go to breadwinnercafe.com. But I went here on purpose because, Stephanie, you're going to like this. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a cran.
I've been looking at these breads, man. They look
what, you
good.
Like cranberry?
Oh, you're digging the name.
They look good as hell.
Well, she wants the mocha chocolate chip bread.
That's right.
Mm. Well, here's some cookies.
Oh, my God.
I brought you chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. They're massive.
Well,
Jesus.
There's one for everybody.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Oh, my God.
Those are our chocolate chip cookies.
These are pajama cookies. Like, I have to be in pajamas to eat this. Just so I can expand.
Well, you can't hang on to the bag the whole time, so pass it around.
We're going to eat now?
Somebody's going to take all of them.
I want mine.
We'll be right back.
Oh, my God, these look so good.
This bag is heavy as shit.
There's four cookies in it.
It's 2 pounds.
I loved it. I'm not a cook, but I love to bake. Yeah. And I love, like, I don't know if you watch any of the shows. Jesus. Like, the Holiday Baking Championship's on again right now.
Is it?
Oh, I'm obsessed with it or whatever, but... It's so relaxing. I
love to cook. I'm not, ironically, I don't love to bake. And yet, the first 4 years we were in business, I baked every goddamn bread that we sold. About made me crazy.
Did you come up with the menu for Breadwinner Cafe?
Well, the menu, no. Some of it I did.
Right.
Getting back to the opening of Breadwinner Cafe, I really didn't know. I had a vision, and the vision is what we're doing right now, which is this fast casual, moving through the line quickly, soup, salad, sandwich, and neighborhood place. But I didn't know the first thing about operations of a restaurant.
You had worked at Murphy's for a while.
I worked at Murphy's for a long time, but that was – I mean, I worked there in like the mid-90s. It had been so long. But I did learn a lot when I worked. I worked there for 3 or 4 years, and I worked at a place called Stony River up in Alpharetta for a while, and actually learned a lot there. It's a very well-run operation.
Good steaks.
Yeah, but it's really well-managed, and I learned a lot about... So I say I didn't know anything when I opened. I did. I knew a decent amount, but not like where... I brought in a chef who... David Bressler, who was very talented, and he owned his own restaurant, so he had a lot more recent experience of running a restaurant and managing people, and I learned a lot from him with that. And he's also an exceptional cook, and a lot of his recipes made it on the menu. And my current chef Mesta, a lot of his recipes are on the menu, some of mine, And some of them just kind of appeared from different random people. And so
your sandwiches look really good.
Thank you.
Now, is there only one? Is that one location?
That's the only Breadwinner Cafe. Then we opened Farm to Ladle at Pont City Market last year.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And then we opened Farm to Ladle at Avalon.
What's Avalon?
That's in Alpharetta.
It's really
kind of like Atlantic Station, but in Alpharetta.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's a bit smaller than Atlantic Station, but it's got the big movie theater, and it's got, you know, they've done a nice job with bringing in local restaurants again between us and Marlowe's, Goldberg's, Antico Pizza.
It's not just like Moe's and Doc Green's.
Right. Or, yeah. I think there's really only one restaurant in there that's not like an Atlanta-based.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple new ones that are bigger places from Charleston.
Bocato Burger's up there, right?
Bocato Burger. Right. Kona Grill is more of a national chain. But I think, they did it right with, look, I mean, there's some household names that are in the city that people up there, you know, they got to drive 45 minutes to get to Antico Pizza, and the closest Goldberg's and Farm to Ladle's at Ponce. So it's like, all right, well, let's bring these guys up here.
Yeah.
So it's a nice shopping center. It's really clean. And
I worked at an Antico
Pizza.
Antico knockoff. Not really a knockoff, but a lot of people have left there and opened their own. I worked at a matza in Edgewood for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of getting back into food, I was in radio for a long time and then got fired October of last year, so I had to find something to do. So, you know, I'd made pizzas before, and I made it for a while, but I got, like, I can't do this anymore. Right. I got out of it, so that's why I've been just working part-time. And then I work at a barbershop in Cabbage Town, which is a lot of fun. I never thought I'd like to wash hair, but I get to wash hair. And
talk about a change of career there.
Yeah, what else am I going to do?
He's a renaissance man.
It's fun, though. There's a lot of, you know, cool people that go there. And if you've been to Cabbage Town, which I'm assuming you have, it's an interesting little eclectic neighborhood.
It is.
This isn't about me.
That's okay. Let's.
I feel like you should have gave us these cookies at the end of class, because I just keep...
Tell us about
I'm looking at them.
Tell us about the Farm to Ladle concept.
Self-control.
So Farm to Ladle was... We had talked for a while about rebranding the restaurant side of our company, because Breadwinner was really fitting for the baking side, but it wasn't really... Didn't really describe what we're doing on the... You know, we kind of a healthier... you know, GMO free, as locally sourced as best we can type of place, and yet we have bread in our name, and it just wasn't. Bread can be really healthy, but it can also not be. And so, and at the same time that we were talking about rebranding, as we grew, we were approached by Pont City Market to open a Breadwinner style restaurant there, but. As you probably can see with Pont City Market, they've brought in all local restaurateurs who had at least one successful restaurant, and what they were bringing in would have a different name.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. You know, all these guys, Dubs Fish Camp is Ann Quintrano, and so she wasn't going to put Star Provisions in there. It was going to be something different. And
Gus's.
Hops Chicken?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's Gus's?
Gus's is the fried chicken place downtown that's out of Memphis.
Yeah, me and Jeff ate there.
Yeah, we ate there.
And it's really good.
That's what I'm thinking of.
It's really good.
Ponce is such an interesting place.
It is.
The restaurants in there, the winery.
I haven't been to the roof yet. Have you been to the roof?
No.
They got the amusement park up there.
Yep.
Or the playground, or the whatever it's called. What is it called?
It's kind of like a boardwalk style.
Right.
Yeah. They've got a miniature golf.
Right.
A putt-putt.
They've got a bar up there now.
Ball.
They've got a restaurant up there. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, I
got
to do that.
I love going there. You know, I get down there about 3-4 times a week, and I still, you know, whatever it is, 12, 14 months later, I'm still sometimes get chills walking in the building. It's such a beautiful
place. They did a nice job.
They've done such an incredible place.
Keeping a lot of the original stuff that was in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And City Winery is a nice venue.
It is a nice venue. I saw the Kevin Kenny show there.
Did you?
Yep. He was in residence there for a while.
He was.
Right?
I was at the show where Peter Buck played with him.
Richard Thompson did 3 shows there, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the same weekend at Fish. And I found out, well, we all found out, I guess Dave told us that it was request only. And I've never seen that kind of show with Richard Thompson, so I would love to see that. I haven't seen any show there, so that's one thing I'm going to do.
I've been there a few times now.
It's a neat venue.
I was supposed to see 10,000 Maniacs there, but I guess they sold too many tickets and they moved it to the Buckhead Theater.
Speaking of the Crows, I saw Rich Robinson.
10,000 Maniacs. Yeah. Rich Robinson, who's that?
That's, you know, this Chris and Rich Robinson. Oh, the Black
see,
Crows
I'm, Tim, and now I'm embarrassed and Jeff's looking at me like an idiot. Not Jeff Leboff, he's always looking at me like
that. Yeah, I always look at you like an idiot.
I'm not looking at you.
Rich wrote all the music and Chris wrote all the lyrics, pretty much. And, you know, Rich was the kind of soft-spoken brother of...
I said something to somebody last week about... I said, I want to go see the Chris Robinson Brotherhood.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at me and went, I don't like that hippie crap. And I said, but you love the Black Crows. And he goes, I don't like that jam band crap.
Well, I think Chris is doing, like, a hippie thing. He's doing more like a Dead type thing. You probably would have loved it.
I probably would, yes. So
My first... Not to get off track.
No, please. We call it Labyrinth.
We always get off track.
My first experience in a recording studio was the summer of 89, and I was home from school for the summer, and I was an intern at a place called Soundscape right over, not too far from here, and recording the first Crows album. Brendan O'Brien was engineering, and George Drakoulias was producing, and I was the intern on the record.
Get out
and
of here.
It was like... They were still a local band. They were still Mr. Crow's Garden, and they had just gotten signed to, was it American Records? And while I was there is when the name change happened to Black Crows, and it was
pretty cool.
I mean, it was fun. I mean these guys,
they got big on a cover.
They did. They did get big on a cover. They But God, they partied hard in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, half my job was cleaning up the place. And I had a fake ID. Chris was underage. Both guys were underage. And I was the one going out getting the beer.
Wow.
So,
man, that's awesome.
In the summer of 90, I was program director at a college station.
Uh-huh.
And we got that record in the mail. And that's how they all came. They came as LPs. And I just listened to the whole thing because I was like, I'll listen to this. It's good. And then I was like, wow, this is... great album.
It's a great album.
And reported that I put them on there, and then they called me, and I was like, oh, thanks for playing our record. So,
cool.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, both those first two albums are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morica was
a big,
Morica was great, too. Yeah.
I was in 11th grade when that album came out. It was really, really big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I was in West Virginia, too, so.
Yeah.
I guess because it had, like, that southern rock feel to it. It was like, one of the biggest albums of
the year.
It was
new, too, like, being here in Atlanta, where... You know, there were a lot of these alternative bands from that era in the Southeast that were getting a lot of the attention, like college radio attention, whether it was Connell's and Guadalcanal Diary and Let's Active and Pylon, but none of these bands were really getting much farther than the Southeast and a circuit of like maybe 12 to 15 clubs. And, you know, Guadalcanal got a little bit bigger and Connell's got a little bit bigger, but then all of a sudden this band that wasn't necessarily like on that circuit
just not blew. An Athens band.
No, and they just blew up. I mean, it was great. I mean, it was great to see that kind of, you know, exposure being given to Atlanta at the time. And I think it did kind of open up the industry's eyes to a lot more of what was I was up in Chicago in school at the time, but I was paying really close attention to what was going on here. But it was exciting. It was an exciting time for music.
And now Atlanta is the home of pretty much most of the popular hip hop artists.
Right.
Now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that studio that we recorded at is now Stankonia.
Oh, it is.
Oh, wow! So, really? See, that's really all I ever go to is rap shows.
Yeah. So that was
next to Zach recording.
I guess it's over there on Antone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, do you want to play us something, and then we'll take a little break, and then come back, and we'll talk about...
He just wants to eat a cookie.
you're producing.
What are we
going to
play?
Now.
You can play anything.
Play,
you like.
Yeah, whatever you'd like.
You got a level there?
Yeah, I think we're all right. Thank you.
walls are built up, stone by stone.
Start over.
No problem.
Walls are built up, stone by stone. Fields divided one by one. And the train conductor says, take a break, driver eight. Driver eight, take a break. We've been on this shift too long. Says, take a break, driver eight. Driver eight, take a break. We can't reach our destination. Still a ways away. Saw a treehouse on the outskirts of the barn. Power lines have flowed a Sophie. Airplanes won't get snapped. Bells are ringing through the town again. Children look up, all they hear are sky blue bells ringing. And the train conductor says, take a break, driver eight. Driver eight, take a break. Can't reach our destination, still a ways away. But we're still a ways away. Wait to see what he. Wait to put myself.
We were in Westworld, you know? Like, yeah. Could see that whole.
Yes.
You know. It was very cool.
Thank you.
Yes.
That was fun.
Well, we'll be right back.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes and like us and give us ratings. We'll read them at the end of the show. Also, follow us on Twitter at @radio_labyrinth and on Facebook, Radio Labyrinth.
And we're back.
That's right, we're back. Don't forget, we still have the Shining tribute, the awesome t-shirt art that was done by Ben Bowling. Our t-shirt is still available at T-Blaster. You can go to T-E-E, tblaster.com/rip. You can just go to the, I don't remember it off the top of my head.
But if you need your teas blasted, that's the place to go.
Yeah. you can see it on our Facebook page, which is just Radio Labyrinth, or you could find it on Twitter, @radio_labyrinth. There are still a few left, so get yours before they are sold out. You have, I think, 11 more days. So, you know, don't wait until the last minute. They make a great stocking stuffer. And if they sell out, we will do a Christmas t-shirt as well. So there's that.
How many do we have to sell out?
25.
25?
25. We can do it.
We're almost halfway there.
Almost. Well,
hey, you radios buy two each. You hear me? Two each.
Yeah. And I know the ones who have purchased them, so thank you very much. You know who you are.
Thank you. In fact,
Queen Radio and King Radio, they've purchased a pair of t-shirts for themselves.
Sean and Lisa?
Yeah. Oh, God. Did I sound like an old lady at a beauty parlor?
That beauty parlor you're working at is rubbing off on me today.
Whenever I get this, I always do the late Jack Klugman.
Felix.
After the cancer. Yeah.
Felix.
That's,
all right, that's terrible.
Foreshadowing.
It was just November 13th yesterday.
It was. Yes,
it
was.
The day Felix Unger was asked to remove himself from his place of residence.
That request came from?
His wife.
Joining us this week. Jeff Melkonian, who is a musician, a producer, a chef. Well, are you a chef?
I'm not a chef.
Not a chef.
He's a restaurateur.
Restaurateur.
A cookie god.
Yeah, those chocolate chip cookies you brought us from Breadwinner. Awesome.
Yeah.
They're at Farm to Ladle, too.
At
Farm
to
Ladle. Just in case anybody's wondering.
It's the right amount of chocolate chips.
Same cookie.
If you want a good grab-and-go meal, go to Farm to Ladle. You can get your fix at Avalon, which is in Alpharetta, or Ponce City Market, which is in Midtown, Atlanta, in the Ponce area.
Fourth Ward.
I'm a little under the weather, in case you can't tell.
Everybody is.
We all are.
The weather's effing everybody up.
Breadwinner Cafe is in Sandy Springs, and you can order Breadwinner Breads at breadwinnerbreads.com. So, Jeff, you were you played us out in the first segment with REM tune Driver 8, which is one of my favorites. And you were saying earlier, you guys only play up to what album?
Well, we
the remakes.
Really,
by the way.
Yeah, the remakes basically through Green.
Okay.
But then once in a while we'll throw an occasional song in from one of the next few records. You can ask Jeff Lee Buff.
Yeah, kept what's every, the frequency?
He writes down every song.
He keeps our set list in the
at
every show and posts it by the time I wake up the next morning, which is good because there's been several shows where myself and the other guys included don't remember parts of the show. They're black in
I've
our
been
heads.
There.
Was it tough for you to be lead guitar and also
sing? You play two roles in,
I do.
In the remakes.
Is it tough? No, it's not tough because I've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of learning the parts so well on both sides, and then being able to do them innately without thinking, and that's kind of the headspace I have to get into on certain songs. Some songs I don't are no different than playing like a Neil Young song or something like that. But really, with certain ones, there that have a lot more intricate guitar parts, like a Wolf's Lower or Feeling Gravity's Pull, where there's the melody being sung is far away from what's being played on guitar. I just have to really not concentrate, just get into a headspace that doesn't.
How do you get that sound in What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
How do I get it? I don't. Okay. I kind of
play it without.
I kind of BS my way through
some
things like that where I don't really play with a whole lot of effects pedal. I don't have any effects pedals. I have a distortion and no distortion.
Okay.
And a tuner.
Tuner.
And I really just, that classic Rickenbacker through the Fender twin reverb, not twin, deluxe reverb. That's just the sound, and it
right.
I have kind of overdrive it a little bit.
Do you get any members of the former members of REM? Have they seen you or?
Well, Yes.
Or played with you.
Even. Yes. All three of the last, Michael, Mike, and Peter have seen me play. And in fact, we did a show together at back in the 5/8 heyday, and about 10 years ago, we were on the road with them for a couple weeks, but also we did a tribute up at the 40 Watt, an REM tribute, mm-hmm. with lots of bands, and it was a great night of Drive-By Truckers played and Modern Skirts and Bane Maddox. It was really, really fun, and REM was in town for it because they mm-hmm. were being inducted into the Georgia Music Hall of Fame that weekend, and they were recording a song at their with David Barbie that week too. So they actually opened the show. They played two songs, original lineup with Bill Berry, and then they all, except for Bill, stuck around for the whole night mm-hmm. and watched us all play, and then came up on stage while we were playing and played with us and kind of stole instruments and
wow.
So all of a sudden there's actually YouTube footage of it.
Were you guys sitting there like, holy shit?
We kind of were, yeah. We really yeah. were, and there was a moment Peter and I were bantering a lot during
yeah?
the show, yeah.
Oh,
and
cool.
it was very surreal, and it was probably one of the coolest nights of my life, and
wow.
got to hang out with him afterwards for a long time, and I got really nice compliments from Peter on the guitar playing on certain songs, and
that's got to be awesome.
It was really cool.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
What's up there as far as like your favorite REM song, like top two?
Oh God,
that you love to play.
I love to play.
He likes the easy shit.
No, well, it's God. I mean, some of them, yeah. I love playing Feeling Gravity's Pull. Something about just, I love that song. I love playing it. I always love playing King of Birds.
I love that song.
Yeah. It just kind of, it's like a bloodletting. Mm-hmm. You just scream it and let it out.
Right.
I always love the energy. I think Life's Rich Pageant has this incredible energy to it. And there's doing... Begin the Begin and These Days back to back is always a trip.
Begin the Begin is my favorite REM song.
I think it's one of mine for sure. I mean, it's just that era is mm-hmm. so great. And you know, sometimes it's fun to we don't play it that often, but I love playing World Leader Pretend. It's just such a great.
Didn't you play that at Venkman's?
We didn't. No.
No.
No. We played it. How many times have we played it? Jeff, like twice.
Yeah, once. I think maybe once.
Once
that I've yeah.
okay.
he's our yeah. historian librarian. Yeah, I mean, God, they're all fun to play. Those are probably my favorite go-tos.
Are there any other kind of like? Well, it's a stupid question I was going to ask. What influenced you? I know this is such a generic question, but I know that. From listening to Josh Joplin, that uh-huh. Dylan obviously is an influence to him.
Sure,
Phil Oakes especially. Yep. What are some of the acts that you grew up digging and wanting to?
Well,
be
it's
like?
Funny with Josh. We got compared all the time. He got compared all the time to Michael Stipe, and he was not an REM fan, and not at all. He's such a folk singer,
right?
Guy.
Was it hard to start out a band with him?
No, not at all.
Haven't been a solo guy this whole time, and then
it was hard to start because he wasn't used to playing with a band. So
right.
and me and the drummer were kind of tight. I was a bass player, and we just had this tight rhythm section. And he had, you know, in the beginning, Josh had a hard time locking into that. And in time, we really we kind of took a step back and focused on that. You know, just getting through the music, but. No, Josh was he still is, I mean, huge fan of Phil Oakes, Billy Bragg, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen.
Right.
I mean, he turned me on to Leonard Cohen 20 some odd years ago.
Peace.
Yeah. But he really was not, Josh never gravitated towards REM or, I mean, like some of the mainstream stuff that he was into was like The Clash and, but he was certainly not into like AOR, you know, like Zeppelin or anything like that. He just...
I don't imagine he was really into the Indigo Girls that much either, but he kind of became an Indigo Girl himself.
What? He wasn't...
What does that mean?
He toured with them a lot. Okay. And,
no, we did a lot of shows with Indigo Girls. But he was very, you know, he wanted to be more of this, like, Billy Bragg
right.
folk singer that was just in your face and a lot of screaming and political and, mm-hmm. And so when we started playing together, there was, you know, we were, the idea was to kind of soften that a little bit and be a little bit more of a pop band, radio band, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, Billy Bragg wasn't quite burn up the charts at the time.
No.
So,
he didn't until he went poppy.
Right.
We got that one
for
hit.
A minute there, right? Yeah. So yeah, I mean that was the early days of Josh.
And where did the Han Solo outfit come from?
You what?
Know, you, whenever I see Jeff playing, he's always dressed like Han Solo.
Oh, now. You mean?
Yeah.
That's just my really bad attempt at like the Athens, you know, the Peter Buck Athens look
right.
from the early 80s with the black vest and the white shirt.
Right.
I've still got all my black 501 jeans.
I love you.
I know.
And you don't use any lyrics or anything when you're playing.
I fake it.
Yeah, you just kind of go with the flow. Because the last couple times I saw R.E.M., Stipe was using some lyrics for certain songs.
Well, it's like when I was in high school, my parents were like, you know, you've got 8,000 songs memorized in your head. Why can't you memorize your history or your, you know, math stuff?
Because I want to.
Where yeah. Jeff and I,
it's not that interesting.
Right.
Where Jeff and I grew up, it was a small town in North Central PA, and we had a small college in our town. So we had limited amount of access to college music in the mid to late 80s.
Right.
Not a lot, though, because it was such a small community that they played what you heard on regular radio, too. There wasn't a distinct college format. But I remember hearing South Central Rain when it was a single or when it was being played. But I was at the time listening to Motley Crue and Megadeth. But that song came on and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And it wasn't until the one I love that mm-hmm. when it really caught on with me who they were.
Well, it's amazing. I'm always amazed at how R.E.M. kind of broke through the mold in that era. I mean, the early days of the college radio was different because it was more of a unique crowd that was, mm-hmm. but then again, I mean, they're selling out these huge theaters and they're only getting played on college radio and there was no internet and there,
no.
you know, we were, I have a collection of like 100 bootlegs from the '80s from mm-hmm. them. And we were trading bootlegs across the country. We were like, you know, fan clubs or getting to know each other through these fanzines and hooking up with these guys. And you were just writing letters to these people. Hey, I've got this. Can I get a copy of this? I'll send you a copy of this. I mean, literally, that's what we were doing.
And they did a lot of covers then, too, because I used to have one or two of those. And they would do Radar Love and stuff like that.
Have you ever seen The Rain?
Yeah.
And then what was, you know, even more interesting is when they did kind of break through into, you know, a mainstream radio. And you think about what was on the radio at the time. I mean, Losing My Religion was their biggest song. And it had a mandolin as the main instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And think about what else was out in 1990. It was Motley Crue and
Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, but I mean, like, and these guys have a number one song.
Right, right.
Sold 8 million records without touring that record. They didn't even tour that record.
Right.
Do you hate the mandolin? Is that why?
No.
Is that why you stopped with Green? I always
wondered why
there, I never see the remakes actually, bust out of mandolin.
There's
from
actually
time to
some
time.
Good mandolin on Green, No, I don't hate the mandolin. No.
How could you hate the mandolin?
I like the mandolin. I have
the
mandolin
wind.
I like it.
The mandolin wind. Listen to it, Ira. Huh. The mandolin wind.
Okay.
All right, sorry. We have a mandolin at the barbershop.
Oh.
Yes.
Do people know how to play it?
Are you learning?
No, I can't play anything.
Well,
this
could be your chance. It's
never
there. The instrument is there.
It's all never too late unless you're lazy like I am.
I would like it if you guys give an
because they're an REM tribute band, you covered another band as REM. Like, if you covered Dio songs as REM, you know, like Holy Diver and something like that, you know?
I want to hear Michael Stipe sing
like
Holy Diver.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But getting back to that college radio thing, you used to look in the back of Rolling Stone, and they may still have it there, but they always had the college music charts.
Little top 10 college.
Yeah. And that's where I kind of looked, and I went to it. I remember I would buy albums from the reviews, not knowing the artist. I bought Camper Van Beethoven.
Yeah.
Bought that going, oh, this is getting
whatever was on that list I was buying.
Yeah.
I
I guess I enjoyed it because I kept listening to those bands. But one of those bands toward the end was Husker Du. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that my musical palate was refined enough to enjoy them back then. And I fully believe that as you get older and as you listen to more and more music, you appreciate things that maybe you didn't appreciate when you were younger. And Husker Du is one of those bands. But when his first solo album, Bob Mould's first solo album, came out, and
Workbook. Yep.
I listened to that every day.
Yeah.
And loved it.
And you should. It's a beautiful record.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The guitar work in it is amazing. And See a Little Light, it's a great pop song. Yep. And that's when I became a fan of his. And then, of course, I got into Sugar, that power pop and stuff.
Right.
And I'm bringing this up because we were both at the Bob Mould show at Terminal West last week.
There.
And that was such a fantastic show. But you were telling me before we started recording that you did catering for the show.
We did. We got to cater the backstage of the night.
How'd that happen?
A friend of mine, Maggie Whitfield, we do a bunch of catering work together. She hooked it up, and it was kind of a random, hey, you want to do – I already had a ticket.
Uh-huh.
And – excuse me. And we I was like, sure, you know, let's – yeah, I'd love to. Happy to. And it all came together. We ended up getting a feed, Bob Mould and his band and David Barbie and his band as the openers. And it was fun. We just hung out backstage with them, and they dug the food. And
he did?
Yeah. You know, it's like you don't get to – we're on the healthier side. I mean, like healthier homemade side. And, and, you know, we put a bunch of really good sandwiches and salads out there, and they were digging it.
Were you like, nervous about it? Were you like, everybody better have your shit, there not be one hair in this food, I'll kill everybody.
I was not nervous about it. I was very excited. I got my vinyl copy of Sugar, of the first Sugar album signed, and he couldn't have been, he's such a gracious, Bob Mould is such a gracious guy. I've met him several times. And
the previous times in a musical capacity, like you were on at a show or?
Always at his shows, actually, you know what? I take that back. Not the first time I met him, but a couple times after, he was a friend of a friend of somebody in Josh Joplin group, and came to see us like two or three times in New York when he was living there. And we played up there all the time, and he used to come to our shows.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, there's Bob Mould.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
I enjoyed it. It was a nice mix of newer stuff
and
some Husker Du and some Sugar.
Well, and, you know, that was when I was in high school too. One of the regions that was so that I got so into was the Minneapolis scene, and I was, it's like the first time I heard the Replacements, I was done. I was cooked. They're still one of my favorite bands, and which led to Soul Asylum, which led to Husker Du, which, you know, there was just so much good stuff coming out of Minneapolis at the time, and it was like the Athens of the Midwest, and I mean, yeah, Husker Du gets under your skin, and you're like, oh, this is good. And
alternating between Bob and Grant Hart, and
And I discovered them kind of at the end of their career as well, and I don't know if you know, one of their last shows was at Emory.
No, I didn't know that.
Out on the field, I can't remember what it's called, Legion Field or something like that. And they used to have these free concerts on Friday afternoons, and one of their last shows ever, if you look on their tour calendar for Husker Du, was there. And
wow.
I, for some reason, didn't go or couldn't go, and big mistake.
And Bob, oopsie. By the way, Bob Mould looks to be in amazing shape for... He's a rock guy, a guy that's in a band for 30 years or so, and touring constantly. He's just ripped.
He's very healthy right now and has been for many years, probably, if I had to guess, I could be wrong, but I had to guess probably 10 or 12 years. But there was some not-so-healthy Bob years.
Yeah, drinking, drugging.
one of my favorite memories was when I was in school. He did an acoustic show in our student union auditorium, and Vic Chestnut opened, and they were touring together. They were and it was just the two of them. Vic played his set, Bob played his set, and you know, I just couldn't mind my own business, and I'm kind of following them now to back, you know, loading docks, see, you know, how they're traveling, and they literally, like, it was one of the, I don't want to say funny, it was just such a crazy scene. It was Bob Mould lift, first of all, Bob, they're driving like a 78 Oldsmobile Cutlass or Chevy Cut, some sort of big beat up sedan.
Yeah.
And he lifts Vic Chestnut into the passenger seat.
Right.
Because Vic is paralyzed from the waist down, was, and throws the wheelchair in the back, throws the two guitars in the back, gets in, and I actually got close enough to the car to look in, and there's like 18 cigarette cartons in the back, and it was just such a shithole of a car.
Yes.
And off they drove to the next town. they're traveling a little more in style now. They have a they have a Mercedes bus, you know, one of those little not quite a van, but not a bus.
It's like a transit van.
Yeah. So yes, there's Healthy Bob now. Thank goodness.
Are there any shows coming up that you're looking forward to besides the remake show in January?
January 14th remakes. Yep.
At Venkman's.
At Venkman's.
Tickets still available.
Tickets still available.
Get them soon, though. They sold out last time.
What am I going to see? I just saw, you know, I saw the Boxer Rebellion last Tuesday. They were great.
Who were they?
They were at Terminal West. They're a really interesting band. I've always kind of dubbed them as like a British version of The National.
Okay.
They kind of remind me of the early Coldplay records, which are kind of the ones I like by Coldplay. And they're great. They put on a great show. I don't think I have I'm going to a Falcons game. Is that correct? Taking my son to his first Falcons game.
Oh, yeah?
Well, they lost last time, so they're probably good to go. But they'll probably get to go this time. You know, it'll that's
be good.
Usually
it'll
their
be
deal.
A good game.
Well, at least have them go to the Dome before it's gone.
I know.
Now, did you say you were working on a movie right now or producing a movie right now?
I am.
Oh.
I'm producing.
Can you talk about it?
I can.
Please. What are you not doing?
Yeah. What am I not doing, honestly?
Are you a raconteur?
So back to 5-8, Athens, Georgia. These guys are they're my favorite band that never got known, and they're all very close friends of mine. And they've been a band now for 25 years, 26 years, something like that, and they have the longest tenure of any Athens band current other than Widespread Panic.
Wow. Widespread's from okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know
they're that. Still together.
Original,
they're
original members?
Yeah. And
wow.
It's the original members.
Damn.
So I got to know these guys when they actually switched drummers in 97-ish. Mike Rizzi, who's one of my very close friends, and I was living with him at the time, became the new drummer, and that's really how I got into... I always liked 5-8, but I'd never dug deep into their stuff, and then I really got to know them well once he started playing with them, and I got to know Mike Mantione really well, who's the lead singer and guitar player and songwriter. Once things kind of slowed down with fast forward to 2001, things were kind of slowing down with Josh, and funny story. They played the Friday after 9/11 and at Smith's Old Bar.
Jeez.
And it was just like, people were just starting to kind of get out again, and they decided they're not going to cancel the show. They're just going to do the show, get out there. And, you know, emotions are running high all over the place. And They started playing a couple new songs that they hadn't recorded yet, and one song was called Bad Juices, and it was this beautiful song. It was about his cousin who killed himself, and it was just there wasn't a dry eye on the place. It was just like this heart wrenching, beautiful song. And once the show was over, I said, "All right, we're recording that song next weekend. We'll find a studio. I'm doing it, and which led to producing that next record, and that's the record called 5/8. It's the black record. It's and so it was a hard time for everybody, and Mike was going through a lot, and my band was kind of coming to an end, and we developed this really great bond and friendship, so fast forward to now, these guys are still going at it. They've made a couple albums since. They put on the best live shows of any band. They're loud. Mike is honestly the greatest songwriter I've ever gotten to know.
Really?
And there's such a great story in there. So myself, Mark Pilvinsky, who's the director, it was his brainchild to do this documentary. And he was working at the Flagpole for many years, did a lot of articles on 5/8, big fan. And my friend Jackie, who I can never pronounce her last name, but I always call her Jackie Shotglass because that's what her name looks like. And so the three of us are making this movie now. She and I are co-producing it, and he's directing it, and we're doing a full-length documentary on it. There's actually a 18-minute documentary on their one of their first albums called Weirdo, which is a brilliant record. They went back 2 years ago and remixed and remastered it because it was a disaster of a mix and master the first time around. David Barbie produced it. He remixed it with the band, and they did an incredible job. And so Mark documented the whole thing and made a little 20-minute documentary on that, which I think you can. It's on Vimeo. Mm-hmm. I think if you search,
I'll find it and put it in the link.
Yeah, and if not, I'll send you the link. But cool. It's he did a great job with it. It was a very quick documentary, so it's you can't look at it with your production eyes and ears on it. Mm-hmm. But he did a great job just documenting that, and it really has now. We've gotten a lot of people very interested in being a part of it, and we're getting some good interviews for it, and we're excited about it. We're still kind of, right now we're collecting a lot of live footage, a lot of, we're still in the documenting phase of the history of the band. But
were you able to find old footage? And
well, the band's been very helpful with getting footage, and then there's a lot of people who come out of the woodwork that want to contribute what they have, and Luciano Girano was on the road with us when we were doing the REM tour, and he, for a good couple years in there, kind of videoed so many shows and so many backstage, and got a lot of Super 8 footage, and I've got a ton of
Super 8 B-size footage.
Yeah.
Yep. That's, I can't wait.
Isn't that the film? That's the old film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
There's no sound to it, but it's really cool.
You can
video.
Add sound.
Yeah. So we're really excited about that, and that's we're hoping to probably. Looking at about a year from now, getting that out.
Cool. Sorry. Anything
Sundance,
else?
Sundance, here we come.
Sundance, yes.
That's actually what we're shooting for, so we'll see.
Anything
sounds
else?
Sounds like a Netflix original.
We're hoping
Netflix.
Netflix.
Amazon.
That would be a series.
Amazon, Netflix, you name it, Hulu.
Let's hope so.
We got the remake show January 14th. Yeah, we mentioned it once. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you ever just like pull up a stool at your own place and just start playing while people are eating their sandwiches?
No, it's never happened. It's never happened. There's always.
Like some slaw?
Yeah, there's always something going on at the restaurant that takes my attention from whatever I'm doing, but
dealing with employees.
I have great we really do have great employees, so very
you're lucky. Yeah,
well, we take care of them. We create a culture, and it's not always perfect, but I mean, God, we've been very lucky. We have at Breadwinner, we've got 7 employees that I opened the restaurant with 7 years ago. So
jeez.
I mean, they're
you must treat them well because that's an industry with a ton of turnover.
Yeah, right. It's insane.
It is, and my accountant thinks I'm nuts because it's like these people that started out at whatever $11 an hour are now making $18, $19 an hour because they get a dollar raise every year. And
yeah,
he's like, you need a clean house, and I'm like, you don't understand.
This
that's not how
like
it works.
A well-oiled machine.
I can go away for a month,
right?
And
that's part of your success.
Exactly.
I'm sure
it is. It is, and they're incredible people who are very dedicated, and I'm dedicated to them, and comes out in their hard work.
Yeah.
if you're in the Sandy Springs area and you want something to eat that's delicious and you want a nice lunch, go to Breadwinner Cafe. Find out all about them at breadwinnercafe.com. You want to find a lot of breads? Christmas is coming. Holidays are coming. All the holidays are coming up, the important ones, right, for everybody. Go to breadwinnerbreads.com. Send somebody some bread, right?
Yeah. This is great. This is like an infomercial. I love this.
You guys cater corporate lunches too, right?
We do
right?
cater a lot of corporate lunches.
Okay,
yeah.
You can also.
What about film sets? Have you done that?
You know, film sets tend to have their own catering going on.
Yeah, but I figured maybe they would tap you.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean,
we'll get on that.
When things started ramping up in Georgia with the film industry, we did do our research and really look into it and see if that was a direction we wanted to go in. And they have their catering companies. That's all they do. And
yeah,
it's a lot to keep up with.
Sure.
Did you ever think about doing a food truck when the food truck?
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask that earlier.
We did think about it for about 10 seconds and didn't
all
do
you
it.
Needed.
No, it's, you know, food trucks are, it's a whole different business. It's a whole different business model. I really give those guys a lot of credit that do it and succeed at it. It's a constant marketing thing you got to do with the Twitter and everything. And
not everybody's going to be King of Pops.
And
but if you just stuck with like bread and cookies,
I always thought
soup
would be
good.
We did think about
you know, it's just
who wants to walk around with a bowl of soup in their hand.
Well, it's, you know, look, there's with a lot of things we do food wise, we could have gone in one direction with a food truck, but you know, you're just it's a whole different business model. And the thought of chasing the business every day to a different location, and I don't know how they do it, but I give them a lot of credit. I know how to run a restaurant that doesn't have any wheels on it and sits right there.
Brick and mortar.
Brick and mortar. And, you know, I can...
No generators.
No, although we could use one once in a while.
Like Farm to Ladle, where you can go and have lunch or dinner. And you can find Farm to Ladle at Avalon, which is in Alpharetta, or Pont City Market if you're in Midtown, in the building that's at Venket for so many years and used to have bums out in front of it. Now it's a lovely and thriving shopping and food and experience.
It is.
There's no bums anymore at all?
I don't know. I don't see them. Ponts used to be scary back 20 years ago. When I moved here, it was scary.
They've got bums when it's cold like any other place.
That's right. Jeff took a picture of me next to a bum in the Skyway because of that song when we were in Minneapolis.
I'm glad you picked up on it.
Yeah. Remember that, Jeff? Yeah. The guy was playing an instrument, and we had to give him $5.
Right.
We went up to shoot Bare Naked Ladies for a commercial.
Wow.
That was fun. They got mad at Jeff. Anyway.
We did a bunch of shows.
At the Target Center?
No, we didn't play with them there. We had the same booking agent for a while. We played a lot of shows with them.
God, they caught fire and then whoosh.
Yeah.
I think America got sick of them. Not like Canada.
Canada loves them.
Canada still loves them. But the guy left, the lead singer.
Yeah, Steve left.
You don't leave and go.
They're still touring.
Yeah, without him, what's he doing now? Nothing.
He hosted his own show about food for a while, and then he does solo stuff.
Uh-huh. Natalie Merchant. Yeah. He should tour with Natalie Merchant.
Yeah, the two of them should tour together.
Yeah, and not play anything from 10,000 Maniacs or Bare Naked Ladies.
That would go over great.
Just Tiger Lily.
Yeah, just, oh, jeez.
He can sing back up on Tiger Lily. Jeff, before you leave or before we wrap the show up, we do a thing every week where we kind of throw out our staff picks.
Okay. Yeah, is this what you were talking about, this?
Yes.
Sound breaking?
So we'll let you go first. It's what things people can watch on TV or wherever, you know, movies, whatnot,
yes,
albums.
Sound breaking.
Who's going first?
Jeff.
Oh.
Not Leboff either.
Oh.
The guest, Jeff.
Jeff?
We do staff picks, so just to recommend stuff to people that...
I'm going home right now and watching Soundbreaking on PBS, because tonight's the premiere.
New series on PBS?
New series on PBS about, what are they calling it? From the cutting edge of recording music. Ooh. Stories from the cutting edge.
Like Sound City, or the one that Dave Grohl did on HBO.
That was a great...
It says it was the last project of Sir George Martin, who passed away. Yeah,
so they're doing a thing on the Beatles, and then I know in this episode, I think they're doing Johnny Cash and Rick Rubin.
Oh,
So
it's going to feature 150 artists.
I'm Johnny Cash. Yes.
So 150 episodes, I guess.
I hope so. God, that'd be great. I'm sick of everything else on Netflix right now.
But if you missed tonight, so you can probably watch it on demand. Or PBS, they rerun it.
Yeah, they rerun everything.
Yeah. All right, I guess I'll...
That's my pick.
That's your pick. Thank you, Jeff.
And my pick is go see the remakes at Venkman's on January 14th.
Hey. Okay. Oh, very nice.
Thanks, Jeff.
And I also want to plug the Bert Kreischer Showtime comedy special, The Machine.
Mm-hmm. The Machine.
You can watch it on demand.
On demand? Is it free?
Yeah, if you have Showtime.
Oh, Showtime on demand.
Yeah. It's free if you have Showtime.
My staff pick, it came out this morning, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. His guest this week is John Amos.
Yeah.
From
Good Times.
Good Times. But nice. Also, he was on Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, World's Greatest Athlete.
Okay.
Die Hard 2.
Beastmaster, Die Hard 2.
That was the 70s.
The Leslie Uggams Show. Remember Leslie Uggams?
No, I don't.
I bet you don't. but yeah, he started out, he was...
I thought he was dead until he was in Die Hard 2.
Well, John Amos?
He was in Die Hard 2 in 1989.
I thought he died of a heart attack in Good Times.
I thought he died when he left Good Times.
He left Good Times because they wanted more money.
Right. And, but he died on that.
Same reasons the Red Fox left Sanford and Son for one season because he wanted more money. They wouldn't give it to him, so... They wrote him out for a year while he was in St. Louis, and they had Grady.
That was a hard season.
Whitman Mayo, who was from Atlanta.
Oh.
This is what we normally talk about.
I have a friend you guys need to meet who can talk the way you guys are talking, except it's strictly sitcoms.
Sweet.
And he knows every... I got to get him in here for a show.
Right.
I mean, he knows every line from every character, every... he had us in Stitches last week, and we were out of town with him, and he, remember the scene in Happy Days where Fonzie learned sign language?
Yeah.
He acted out the whole friggin' scene.
Oh.
Because he wanted to get with the deaf girl.
Yes.
And so one of the Tuscadero sisters taught him how to do sign language.
So leather or Pinky?
I can't remember.
He loved Pinky, so it had to have been leather.
I don't know. I don't remember if it was
Quattro, by the way.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was them or Richie that was teaching him how to do it, but it was, I mean, we were late at night, and he was acting out the whole scene with the sign language perfectly, because we looked it up on YouTube right after that, and he nailed the stupid thing.
Wow. It definitely sounds like he'd work out good for us here.
Yeah, I'm going to bring him in for you guys.
Please do.
That would be great.
The other day, Saturday at work, some guy said he was having troubles. I forget what the process was. I said, what are you, Fonzie? You know, who just lost his sight because the radiator blew up in his face. So it was the same thing. I acted out that whole scene where he's trying to put the motorcycle back together blind. Oh, so anyway. Yeah, who is this person? You don't want to name him until
his name's Tom Smith, although his nickname's Shitface Tommy.
We definitely want Shitface Tommy.
And I mean, he's one of my neighbors. I mean, yeah. I don't think you'd know him. Yeah. He's just another schmo.
I want to know him.
Does he come out to the shows?
He'll come out. He's just another schmo, but he's like, you know.
Shitface Tommy.
I mean.
Yeah.
Everybody knows him.
Yeah.
All right. We want hashtag Shitface Tommy. Stephanie, you don't have one, right, Ira?
Well, I thought of something.
Who was on Fresh Air today?
I haven't listened. Okay.
My pick, it's a new animated series on Spotify. And they just dropped like all 10 episodes. It's produced and narrated by T-Bone Burnett.
Mm. Oh.
And what's cool is they're all like 2, 3, 4 minutes long. And they take, music folklore stories like whenever T.I. saved Scott Stapp after his suicide attempt when he fell off a building. Oh, they do that animated. Oh, God, it's so great. Like they show the devil and Scott Stapp going through his whole religious crisis and everything, and it's all done within like 3 minutes, so it's really cool. They tackle the how Kurt Cobain came up with the name Smells Like Teen Spirit for the song, so they show that one. And then, oh God, my favorite was how Louis Armstrong used Richard Nixon as a drug mule, which is excellent. Wow. I'd never heard that story before, and to see it animated, and the animation is excellent.
Okay,
it's really
good. It's on Spotify.
It's on Spotify. Just look up Drawn and Recorded is what it's called.
Okay.
And I'm like, I watched all 10 episodes in, 40 minutes.
Right.
So
cool.
But anyway.
Sweet.
Ira?
Well, since we're talking about Atlanta music, I was going to tell everybody to go see Blackberry Smoke next week. It's November 25th. I think that's Friday. Tabernacle. Mm-hmm. We talk about them every once in a while. I've brought them up. They have a new record out. It's doing very well. Great Atlanta rock and roll slash country band. Well, country. Southern rock, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you've never seen them before, definitely go see them at the Tabernacle.
They kind of got the... They kind of do, like, the best parts of...
Skynyrd
and Driving and Crying and Black
and even
Crows,
the Crows
and Allman Brothers. I mean, they really... They're such a great...
Great songwriters.
We used to see them down at the Ten High all the time.
Well, I used to play... Yeah. I used to open for remnants of their other bands before. Yeah, great band.
Awesome band.
Great guys.
That Drowned and Recorded, they also tackle the story about Dwayne Allman when he shot himself in the foot to get out of going to Vietnam.
No, man.
Oh, yeah?
It's one way to do it.
Anyway, November 25th, Tabernacle.
Want to see a really good songwriter this week? Go, I just saw it online. Go to City Winery, Jimmy Webb.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most prolific songwriters of the 70s.
I've seen him.
Have you seen him?
I feel like I have. Oh, no, maybe. Oh, I'm thinking of Webb Wilder. Anyway, go on.
A Human Cannonball. Yeah.
Drive-By Truckers next week.
Oh yeah, where?
Tabernacle.
Oh, yeah?
This week, I think. No, it's this Saturday. I'm going to that show. You asked me what I'm going to. I'm going to that show.
All right.
Yeah.
This will be out by then. Plug that. Why not?
Great.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much for coming on our show.
It was my pleasure.
Man.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
And we'll
I've
see
never
you.
Talked about myself so much. I mean,
well, now you don't have to for a while.
Yes,
this is great.
You're more than welcome to come in on the show and talk about yourself.
Oh, well, obviously.
Now send Shitface Tommy.
Shitface Tommy's coming in next time.
Yeah, and you just
Tommy.
Learn all the theme songs of the TV shows he's going to talk about.
Yeah.
You're just going to play in the background.
I sort of kept up with him with the theme songs, but I mean, God, the dialogue, the minutiae that this guy knows about these TV shows is uncanny.
That's what I mean.
Well, we need that. We would love to have that.
Your show's going to be like 10 hours long.
That's fine. We can cut it out.
Well, congrats with all your success,
yeah,
man.
Definitely.
With all the restaurants.
Thank you.
And we'll have all
the
links.
The plugs.
All the links and everything will be in our info section, so make sure you check them out. And until next week, please remember to keep it canon.
Two Faces Radio.